Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One.
Well, in this Reasonable Doubt, we get into some, what do we get into? We get into the DOJ being weaponized and many COVID-related subjects as well. First, I'll tell you about Fight Camp. Want to learn how to box or kickbox from real fighters? Fight Camp brings the boxing and kickboxing gym right to your home. Full body workouts you'll actually look forward to. And freestanding punching bag. And it'll take your hardest hits. Made for beginners all the way through, experienced boxers. Learn from six highly trained, qualified trainers. Comes with all the gear you need, including a freestanding punching bag, boxing gloves, quick hand wraps, and punch tracking sensors to measure your speed, volume, and output. Great for kids. Good for self-esteem. You got to be able to use your hands. I used to teach boxing. I know how this works. And no heavy weights, no spinning wheels, just a lot of good exercise and good self-esteem. It's Fight Camp. Right, Gary?
That's right. You can pay for your Fight Camp over 24 months for less than the cost of a boxing gym and get it right away. Plus, Fight Camp offers free shipping with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Just go to joinfightcamp.com/doubt. To get free shipping on Fight Camp, go to joinfightcamp.com/doubt. That's joinfightcamp.com/doubt.
This is Corolla Digital. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on a judgment, get on a mandate, get it on. Welcome to the best hour or so in the universe. It's Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. It's Mark Garagus, still under COVID quarantine. It is
not only
office.
That, I'm getting texted by the county health department, too. So that's not a good omen.
Well, tell me if you get Barbara Ferrer's cell number. I have some choice words for her.
You want to start a texting relationship with her?
I would. She's single. She's ready to mingle. Unclear if she likes guys, gals, humans. She may not be a human fan. All right. Well, lots of hot legal
news. There's a lot of stuff going on. What's your, you always ask me, I never ask you. What's your?
Well, the last time we spoke, we were kind of talking about the DOJ being kind of weaponized. And the story moments after we were discussing that is a story of the DOJ being weaponized. It's interesting because, nothing ever just pops up, a tree just isn't there. There's a soil and there's a seed and there's some fertilizing and you got to till the soil and you got to water it. Then eventually we'll have our harvest. You know what I mean? So this thing, the harvest begins with a bunch of FBI people and folks, politicians explaining that domestic terrorism is the biggest problem this country faces in terms of the domestic terrorists. This is what we have to worry about. Homegrown. And we're not talking about Al-Qaeda sleeper cells. We're talking about Ted Nugent and guys who drive pickup trucks with American flags on them. So that's the statement. And then in order to kind of add credence to the statement, because everyone sort of looks around and goes, I don't know what you're talking about. And then they go, what about Timothy McVeigh? And you go, all right, that was 21 years ago, and that was one guy, but oh, okay. Still doesn't feel like it's a daily occurrence or the biggest problem we have to deal with as Americans. And then there's the riot / January 6th insurrection. And then it's the job of the people who talked about domestic terrorism and white militias and white supremacy groups being the biggest threat we face. Now you're tasked with the job of taking this riot from the 6th and morphing it into something. So now it's an armed white supremacist attack, insurrection. Some of that footage, by the way, that they didn't want you to see, some of the stuff where they had the Ring doorbell cam up in the walls of the of the halls in the building these guys were entering. I don't know if you've seen any of that. It shows guys meandering about and taking selfies. So the reason they didn't want you to see that footage, they said so we couldn't see secret entrances and exits, you know, somehow be compromising. You've probably heard it a million times. Like, well, we'd love to share this video evidence with you, but it'd be compromising to procedure or put people in danger. It really compromises their narrative. That's what they don't want compromised. So we take this riot, we turn it into an insurrection, then we explain this is the greatest attack on American soil since Pearl Harbor, and now what we've done is we've went, okay, we've taken our lunatic statement that we made about white supremacy and domestic terrorism being the most dangerous group that America faces, and we've given it some credence. Sure, we had to lie about how the officer was killed, you know, with a fire, bludgeoned to death with a fire extinguisher, or killed with bear spray or whatever it is. And sure, there's nasty little details about the only person that was shot that day was one of the insurrectionists who was shot by a cop in the neck at point blank range without any warning. But okay, we've done a sufficient job in convincing most Americans that this is a big problem and we need to get the DOJ involved. And now we're having a bunch of people stand up at school board meetings and voicing their opposition to some of the protocols and some of the agendas that we would like to push forward. So we'll just label them domestic terrorists. We'll get the DOJ to work on them. And it all comes to fruition. It's all come full circle. Meanwhile, those parents aren't doing anything and nobody was killed at the Capitol. But all right. We've sort of made it. We've willed it into this so that when we say patently insane things like white supremacists and domestic terrorists are the biggest problem this country faces, we'll somehow get to will ourselves right through taking a bunch of events that don't support that and morphing them into something that does support it. Thoughts?
Well, and then what's interesting about that, you've hit on a couple of things. The one on the school boards, I just saw somebody, I don't know if it's a conspiracy theory or if it's true, that the Merrick Garland's either daughter or daughter-in-law has a interest in or works for a company that supplies some of the programs or materials that are taught in these programs that have become controversial. There also was today reported, I think it's about to either be argued or be ruled on, somebody who has been held at Guantanamo Bay for approximately 15 years. And there's all kinds of action as to whether or not at any point speedy trial is going to kick in or anything else. I've always said for people who denigrate criminal defense lawyers, remember, it's easy to denigrate somebody when you don't agree with them, you don't like them, you don't think they're good, which is what the basis of your argument is. You know, if you have created a boogeyman, if you've created this idea of something that is abhorrent to you, then you don't have to afford them the kinds of rights that you claim are so essential or that you want. And that's a problem because you're going to get hoisted always on by that argument when it shifts and is directed at you. When you say weaponized, I always think of it in terms of, yeah, it's great. Until I can't tell you how many times I've had usually the parents of a kid who comes in and is telling me, how is this possible? Where did my rights go? Blah, blah, blah. And I say, well, do you belong to this group? Yeah. Did you support this? Yeah. Did you think that it would ever be used against you? No, it never occurred to me that it'd be used against me and or my kids or my family. And that's the problem when you judge first by who it is you're trying to basically screw, as opposed to standing back and looking at what's the principle I'm trying to defend. A perfect example that we've seen is one of the guys we had on as a guest, Dershowitz. Dershowitz, last time I talked to him, wasn't recently, but was commenting that it was interesting. He's never taken so much grief ever as for when he defended Trump. The lifelong friends wouldn't talk to him anymore because he was defending a principle. Same thing that he's been doing now in terms of Biden. And people have, they just can't get their minds around it. They can't get their heads around the fact that that a principle should be a principle evenly applied. That's what, the idea of a rule of law as opposed to no man is above the law.
So, Gary, I don't know if you know any more about this story, but evidently these parents, they're showing up at school board meetings. They're shouting. They're always being the thing that's funny is the parent gets up there and the parent goes, I don't want my 5-year-old being told about critical race theory. And I don't want my 7-year-old to be told that little Sally has a penis and a third bathroom for non-binary, whatever. And at some point, the school board has this great Trump card because they'll get on the microphone and they'll go, sir, your mask is down under your nose, sir, the mask. And the person, because what happens is the person shows up with the mask and then they start gesticulating. And the people who are at the school board are not full-time mask wearers. They're not amongst the fucking idiots that are wearing them outside and wearing them while they're driving alone in the car. They only put the mask on so they could get an audience with the school board because the school board says you can't come in without this mask on. So they grab a mask that their daughter was wearing earlier that day. They clumsily throw it on. They get up there. Their arms start flying about. The spittle starts emanating from their mouth. And at some point, the mask will slide down and then the person will go, and it must be nice. Like, I wish I had this rule where my wife wears a mask. And then when she yells at me, at some point I just interrupt her and go, mask, hello, Matt. And then she goes, what? And I go, I'll cut you off. You'll be cut off. You got to get that mask up. Otherwise you're going to get cut off. There's a clip of somebody doing this, but anyway, you can find it. It's a bearded guy trying to wear the mask, and the mask is sliding off, and all they're doing is telling him to pull the mask up, and then at some point, they just cut him off. Because they're like, imagine if you were in control of the microphone that people use to yell at you, Mark. How fast would you go for that button?
It's like, it reminds me, as I'm sitting there, one of the worst times as a criminal defense lawyer is when you've given your closing argument, you sit down, and then the prosecutor stands up for a rebuttal. And you got to just sit there and take it. And
right.
I wish I had the button that right. I could press to just, I mean, sometimes I just want to leave the courtroom. I mean, if it wasn't for the fact that I still have to be attentive to objecting to prosecutorial misconduct and all the other shenanigans, I would just leave because I can't handle it.
Right. But what if his mask started to slide down and you could just stand up and object?
Judge, cut him off.
So these people, who, by the way, they're not planting pipe bombs. They're basically arguing with this school board. We have decided that we don't want to hear any more of their arguments. So, and
which I don't understand. Again, I mean, we've talked about this frequently, but this is a really good point you make here. I may disagree, and in this sense, I may disagree with the characterization of what critical race theory is. I may disagree with the implementation of it. However, there's a certain degree of irony in the fact that when somebody wants to critique the idea of a curriculum, that you're going to cut them off and say, no, you're not going to critique the curriculum. I mean, the irony to that, to me, is just delicious. How do you tell somebody we've got a theory that we want to inject because we want to disrupt the kind of status quo of what has been taught. We're going to inject these other kind of thoughts that go counter to a narrative that has been going on. Yet, if you say, I don't want that, or I want it to be more even-handed, or I would like to have it as a theory, expressed as a theory as opposed to a factor, whatever the basis of your argument is, isn't there a certain degree of I don't want to call it hypocrisy, is almost just delicious irony.
Well, also the interesting, and always be careful about the language and whoever's kind of controlling the language, the sort of vagueness of anyone who poses a threat or speaks in a threatening way or whatever it is, we can read it. But I mean, it's like, well, who's interpreting what's a threat? I mean, if you're the middle-aged school board director and you're getting yelled at by some dad who, you know, took the day off to come down there and settle your hash, then you get to say, I felt like this posed a threat, or I felt threatened by it, and thus the DOJ and the FBI can now get involved. Gary, you have the letter?
I have some excerpts here if you would like.
All right.
It was a September 29th letter from the National School Board Association, who, after citing dozens of incidents at school boards, sent a September 29th letter that cited the imposition of mask mandates in schools, as well as, quote, propaganda purporting the false inclusion of critical race theory within classroom instruction and curricula as the causes of dozens of incidents at school board meetings. Quote, this propaganda continues despite the fact that critical race theory is not taught in public schools and remains a complex law school and graduate school subject well beyond the scope of a K-12 class. The letter went on, despite incidents across the country, there were teachers that have been exposed to be radicalizing their curricula. The National School Board Association then suggested that, quote, as these acts of malice, violence, and threats against public officials have increased, the classification of these heinous actions could be the equivalent to a new form of domestic terrorism and hate crimes.
Well, there it is.
And asked that the administration review the question.
Did you know that?
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Oh, no, I'd heard about it. Yeah, the domestic terrorism and hate crime is so insanely broad by definition that you can really apply it to almost any incident or any situation.
And by the way,
yes.
If this national school board, and I took logic in high school, so I would assume that the school board has some familiarity with logic, they might remember that one of the logical fallacies is the ad hominem attack, where you attack the man, not the argument. So when you start calling somebody a domestic terrorist, as opposed to attacking the argument or engaging on the argument, you're fairly down the path of the fallacious thinking.
But it seemed like only yesterday when the CDC's Rochelle Walensky, I think, came out and said, well, I don't think we need to wear masks in schools. The school board or whoever the head of that union got hold of her, coached her up, and then she had to go back and walk that back. I guess what I'm saying is do we want teachers' unions dictating policy, like federal policy? Do we want them to have that channel to the DOJ and the FBI and the CDC, where they can sit around and go, you know what? They're talking about shit I don't like, or I want people to stop this. So we run a pretty big union over here. We got a lot of juice. We vote for these people. Call it in and tell them here's what we want them to do with the Department of Justice, and here's what we want them to do with the CDC. That doesn't seem like great policy to me.
Well, it's policy. It's pandering policy, obviously. I mean, I could talk about correctional officers unions in California dictating criminal justice reform or lack of reform. We could talk about teachers union and LAUSD and all of the horrible things they do, the teacher jails that they had until we sued them. We could talk about the American foreign policy, where, you know, was it the Panama Papers that just came out with the various world leaders who were trafficking in basically plundering their countries and buying high prices? And in fact, we talked about the CIA talking about assassinating Julian Assange. It's a scary, kind of frightening time for people to have a trust or a faith in their institutions. When you think that the idea that we can just render somebody for 15 years without a trial because we've labeled them a terrorist, even though, by the way, did you forget that we traded four of the people in the cabinet in Afghanistan for Bo Bergdahl.
Right.
And by the way, did you, at the same time we were trying to extradite Julian Assange, apparently another part of the U.S. government was trying to figure out some way to take him out at the Ecuadorian embassy. And as you say, at the same time that we're, you know, I got a call just 2 minutes before we went on air from a client who will remain nameless, but is fairly well known, bitterly complaining about the mandates for that LA City Council has either passed or is going to pass for indoor, and talking about what that's done in New York and other places. And the idea that I'm sitting here having to talk about it 2.5 years. What are we, 2.5 years into this? And we're still talking about this. And
a little under two, right?
A little under two, probably.
Feels like 2.5.
Kind of March would be the start in my mind.
Yeah. By the way, I don't, again, indoor mask, outdoor mask, you know, you know what I feel like? I feel like we need to find some sort of independent judge to crunch all the data and render some decisions. Because I feel like I don't trust Barbara Ferrer. I don't trust Gavin Newsom. I don't trust Garcetti. Maybe someone else doesn't trust Ron DeSantis. Maybe we need to just fucking get some independent counsel in here to figure out what the fuck to do.
I think that would be awesome. Just to clean up what Mark said earlier, the city council, as we record today on Wednesday, has passed it. It is awaiting Garcetti's signature, but he has made comments publicly that he is in favor of it.
Well,
he's not around, isn't he? Wait, Garcetti, I think, is still over. Isn't he at Hunter Biden's art show?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
They're mandating.
I saw that and I said, that's where Adam and my world collides. Can you imagine just being on the, I assume it was on the West Side, was it?
It was on the West Side?
It was in Hollywood, actually.
Yeah. It's on the West Side.
This West Side. And Garcetti, who can't find enough time to come downtown to just, for a minute, take a look at what's happening, has got time to go by Hunter Biden's art show. I mean, you can't make this shit up. I thought I was being punked. And I told Gary, you got to see if this is real, because I don't believe that this is a real thing.
Well, again, it's sort of like when you don't have predators in the wild, you know, I always say this to Drew, you know, where do the lions sleep? And lions sleep in the middle of a fucking field. They go right in the middle of the Serengeti, and the sun is shining, and they just take a nap. It's just a big pig pile of lions. All the other animals sleep in trees because they're always looking for lions, and they're looking for jackals, and they're looking for hyenas, but not lions. Lions just sleep, boom. And if you're a Democratic politician in Los Angeles or in California, who cares about optics? You know what I mean? Like, what's going to happen? Someone going to vote you out? Like, is anything? And after the whole Newsom recall, they really don't care. So just do whatever you want. You can stay as long as you have no predators. Nobody's nipping at your heels. You never have to worry again about optics. You just go about your life. Do what you want to do.
I will tell you what I'm going to make a prediction now. You can play the tape. The Newsom recall has been reported so poorly. The victory laps that that my party taking, the Democratic Party, is so delusional that it's going to come back. We're going to be talking about this in about 13 months, and you wait and see what happens, because they think that that's the approach that they need to take. It's just astonishing to me. I don't get it. They the the powers that be are delusional in the party.
Well, what do you so what is it going to be enacted, Gary, in the next
it would be 31 it would be 31 days from when Garcetti signs it. So he could so it could go in as early as November 5th.
And is that a vaccine mandate?
It is
passport?
A vaccine it is a vaccine mandate and we require that you show proof of vaccination before entering indoor restaurants, bars, gyms, shopping centers, entertainment venues, and personal care establishments.
And is there any natural immunity provision in
there? There is not. There is a you can show a test of the last 72 hours, and that's as good as a vaccination.
You know, I don't mind the test for 72 hours. I don't mind a vaccine mandate as long as it's even-handed. And if you've got the natural immunities, how in the world can you justify that you have to get the vax?
It's as Drew would say, it's an unreasonable or a unnecessary medical procedure. That may sound a little grandiose, but it's basically you're doing something medically you don't need to do. You have, and not
correct.
Only, and Gary can look it up, I think, but not only are you better off with natural immunity, you may be seven times.
I've heard 7 to 13.
7 to 13 times better than
by the way, go to take a look. The study is out. I forget the exact location. Maybe Gary will post it. You can read the article on the data and you come away. I did it. I came away and I said, wow, I almost hope I get it. I mean, I suppose there's an argument to get vaccinated first and then infect me so that I then have, because that's clearly, at least from this study, seems to be the most protection.
But here's the bigger story, I guess, for me. If you want to do a vaccine mandate for all federal employees or something, that's something. And there's different versions of it. But if you own a restaurant and you're a small business owner and you choose not to have this at your place of business, if you just say, I run a small restaurant, I shall make this decision myself. I don't like it foisted on you. Yes, Gary.
I was just going to say, I don't like it being foisted on you either. But the punishment, I was wondering if that's where you were going. Your second violation is a $1,000 fine. And then by your fourth violation, you're getting fined $5,000.
And also,
well, it'll be interesting to see, because I've noticed that in LA, and it's anecdotal, I'll be the first to admit it, but the restaurants we have in LA have been steadily creeping back in terms of business. The restaurants in New York, which has already got the mandate, have dropped, some of the managers say, as much as 40%, which is, you know, you're already kind of swimming uphill. And by the way, if you're in public terminals or things of that nature, the traffic has shrunk dramatically. And so then do people start doing a cost-benefit analysis or not?
No, we never do that. And I can tell you, and not anecdotally, that I travel around the country and I play either clubs or theaters. The clubs are wide open and they're at full capacity. The theaters have vaccine mandates. And the traffic at those theaters, and they'll tell you for every act who comes through there, is dramatically cut into. Now, also, it might.
Did anybody justify why the theaters got the mandates, but the clubs do not? Is it because of numbers?
I'll give you an example. The club, well, it's also sort of where the club is sometimes. But I played a club in Minneapolis 3-4 weeks ago. Its capacity is maybe 330, 350. Four sold out shows. So, 1,500 people passed through that place. And by the way, in a much smaller footprint than a theater. I mean, people were really packed in like sardines. No one's wearing a mask. Nobody cared. That's fine. Then you go to Chicago and you play a theater, and the theater holds 800 people, but they all need to be They all need to have vaccines, because I think what it is any it'll vary from municipality to municipality, but it's like in venues over 500 people or that's over 350 or whatever, that the clubs slide in under the max. The theaters do not. And I was funny. I have somebody shot a picture of me, a really nice black and white shot of me after my show that was in, God, where was I in Chicago? I'll come,
Park West
in Chicago from a year and a half ago. The place is packed to the rafters. I just got back from Park West 2 weeks ago. 200 people in that place. I mean, wow. It was down 500 people. Like, it's just enough for people going, either I haven't been vaccinated, or I have, but I don't want to deal with this, or there are plenty of conscientious objectors. I don't think people really understand the folks that go, I've been vaccinated. I have a vax card. This is America. I don't need to show you that vax card to go into this place. And if that's the rule, then I'm not going at all. Gary's throwing the picture up there.
I love that. That's a great picture, Adam.
It was literally a packed house, and I just got back from there. There was 150 people in that place. I mean,
you know why I like it too? Because it's not you holding the camera.
Yeah, I know. Somebody just snuck up and took it. But yeah, a lot of people are going to stay home. And again, it's unvaccinated people are going to stay home. But I think there is going to be a fairly significant group of people who are conscientious objectors. And also, whether it's going out to see comedy on a Friday night or going out to one of Mark's restaurants, people don't really realize that it doesn't take much to for people to go, ah, fuck it. You know what I mean? Like,
it's the ultimate in discretionary spending. I mean, right. The ultimate. It's not a necessity. People don't go out to eat because, oh my God, I'm starving, so I'm going to go to Engine Company, or I'm starving, I'm going to go to Tenny or Gigi's or something. It's discretionary. You want to go out, you want to enjoy yourself. And I don't know. It just makes no sense.
Comedy is even more discretionary.
Right. Right.
And, you know, these theaters are suffering, man. I mean, of course, the manager, you know, it's a weird conversation because you're there and the place was sold out last time you were there. And now there's 165 people milling about at, you know, a place that holds 800. And it's like, well, and they're just going, every band that comes through here, same thing. Same well, every act.
40 years ago when I was doing Perkins Palace, I can tell you the margins, you know, you think you make a fortune in this business. You really don't. In fact, basically for a club owner or for a smaller concert, a live event person, you're basically breaking even on the door. You're making your money on the F&B, and that's where you do it. It's very slim margins. People think you're just coining money. You're not.
Yeah, so this is going to look, we have a model for it. It's called New York City. If New York City is down 40 or 50%, then presumably LA will be down. And then there's always this unfortunate byproduct, which is people fighting with the person that wants to check, you know. Obviously, you know, I used to teach comedy traffic school. And when I would show up at that Holiday Inn at Lake Elsinore at 8 in the morning on a Sunday, or the one in Pico Rivera or something, every single person who walked into my comedy traffic school class was pissed off, not at the cop, not at themselves. They're pissed at me. I was literally the reason they burnt a Sunday going to traffic school. Now, it doesn't make sense, but what I'm saying is the poor hostess or the poor schlub who's getting minimum wage, who's telling the person they can't come in unless they can produce an ID, guess who's going to get punched? Guess who's going to get the pushback? Guess who's going to get, not Garcetti, he's busy admiring Hunter Biden's spin art. He's fine. It's the fucking guy, the poor chick. We already saw this play out in New York City where she's telling people you can't come in and they're bulldozing her and they're threatening her. I mean, that's got to be the worst job in America.
Talk about a thankless job.
Could you imagine? And it's not only, you know, first you're going to have the people, you're going to inevitably have this. You're going to have the group of four where three people have their vax stuff in their phone or whatever. And then the fourth person who is vaxxed but doesn't have the fucking card on them. And it's like, you can't come in. Like
That was me 3 weeks ago, Italy, New York City.
Oh, really? We,
table of four. The fourth one didn't have her vax card, couldn't be seated.
Just really?
Boom. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. And, you know, and then you start to turn on the person who didn't bring their stinking vax card, too.
Right,
you know?
Right. You got to make an example of her. Oh, boy. All right. Let me tell you about BetterHelp. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is something interfering with your happiness? Is something preventing you from achieving your goals? Perhaps it's Garcetti and his mandates. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with a licensed professional therapist. Start communicating in under 48 hours. Easy and free to change counselors if needed. Not a crisis line or self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online. Log in anytime. Send a message to your counselor. You'll get a timely and thoughtful response. Plus, schedule weekly video or phone sessions. No uncomfortable waiting rooms. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. It's BetterHelp, right, Gary?
That's right. Visit BetterHelp.com/ReasonableDoubt. That's Better, H-E-L-P. And join the over 2 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional therapists in all 50 states. Special offer for Reasonable Doubt listeners. Get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/ReasonableDoubt.
What does Drew think of them? Because I think it's my gut reaction to everything I know about him is that it's a great service.
Drew likes him.
Yeah. If COVID has taught us anything, you got to get your head squared up these days. And the free your mind and the rest will follow, as Invoke sung so many years ago. Be colorblind, don't be so shallow. Yeah. So what do you anticipate as a guy who's heavily involved with the restaurant business in Los Angeles?
There's going to be lawsuits are going to be flying. I mean, as I sit here today, I've got one pending in the U.S. Supreme Court. I'm hoping they take it, because if they take it, then they can restore some sanity to this by reevaluating Jacobson. And I basically posed the question. That was the question. Has Jacobson been basically misinterpreted to the point where it's unrecognizable? We've got him in the federal courts. Interestingly today, Gary, did you pull a clip? They were doing a hearing on one of Biden's nominees to the Ninth Circuit, which is the federal court. Lucy Coe is the name of the nominee, who's a very highly regarded judge, district court judge. Take a listen.
You said about your Korean background reminds me a lot of what my daughter-in-law of 45 years has said. If I learned anything from Korean people, it's a hard work ethic and how you can make a lot out of nothing. So I congratulate you and your people.
Thank you.
It didn't sound like a grilling.
I can't even go there. Anyway, one of the things that they were doing, besides complimenting her for being Korean and Korean barbecue, was the fact of her COVID-19 rulings. And that is coming up under some scrutiny. Some of these rulings on COVID-19, which I've been bitching and moaning about, within the last week, the Ninth Circuit ruled in a way that protects the insurance companies. Ruled, and I don't mean to single her out, because the federal judiciary has almost uniformly, I think it's almost 95%, rejected any kind of challenges to any COVID challenge, whether it is restrictions or passports or business interruption insurance or anything COVID related has been almost uniformly. I've never seen anything where you don't, where you have 95% agreements in the court on any issue except this one, which is astonishing to me. And so circling back to your question, what do I see? The U.S. Supreme Court, the only the three or four or five decisions that they've made that have kind of chipped away at this have all been religious exemptions. And I don't see a religious exemption here unless somebody's going to bring an action that says, I'm not showing a vaccine card because I've got a religious exemption and you need to give me some kind of a safety valve for that. But that's not something that's going to happen overnight to get to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Well, you know what? And why do you think they're all so in lockstep as opposed to COVID? So you stated a minute ago that you've never seen this kind of unity when it comes to courts and judges and circuits. Why with COVID? What is going on?
You know, there's the cynic in me would say that when this originally happened, it disproportionately affected the demographic that are most judges, over 65, older, maybe pre-existing conditions. I don't know. I just can't figure it out. I mean, I've been practicing for almost 40 years. I've never seen what I call a suspension of critical thinking. You know, it comes back to what we were saying before. Critical thinking in this sense, you read some of these opinions, and it's astonishing to me where a state court judge will invoke federal court denials as precedent when they aren't precedent. And we could get into that, but just trust me, they're not precedent. But they say, even though this doesn't bind me, I'm persuaded or I'm convinced this is the better argument. It's not the better argument. You're punting, basically. And that it's a very disturbing thing when people talk about. One of the reasons I've been so fixated on this is, and I'm not a guy who generally does the parade of horribles. You know, you and I have talked about parade of horribles. Oh my God, if this happens, then this is going to happen. But we were talking about this. Thank you, Gary, for reminding me. It's only been a year and a half. It seems like two and a half. We've been talking about this, and sure enough, virtually everything we've been talking about has come to pass. And it's a little disconcerting. And at a certain point, somebody's got to say the emperor's got no clothes.
Well, what's disturbing to me is if, you know, you take Florida and you take California and you take Newsom and you take Ron DeSantis, for instance. So Ron DeSantis says, I would like people to be as free as they can be. I would like businesses to be as open as they can be. I would like tourism and beaches and everything else. But I recognize that there is some danger here. And so I would like to focus on nursing homes or monoclonal steroids or whatever we're talking about. You know, so he goes, I'm going to weigh this out. You know, I'm going to go, I don't think it's dangerous for young people to attend a football game in an open air stadium, but maybe we need to focus on vaccinating seniors or something. So his ethos is sort of, I don't want to be devastated by COVID, but I also have a business to run. Like, there is the business of being in a big state like Florida or California. There's a lot of commerce and a lot of everything. So we can't just willy-nilly shut everything down and lock everyone in their house. We can't go full Australia over here. We got to figure this out. So I get it. And his actions have been consistent with that. Like, you go, all right, he wants to keep things open. You can agree or you can disagree, but at least he makes the proclamation that we're not going to shut everything down. We're not closing schools. We're not going to tell people to mask up at the beach. We're going to do things, but those things have to make sense. And then there's Gavin Newsom and or whomever who's running a deep blue state. And they go, of course, we don't want to punish small businesses. Of course, we don't want to punish the school kids. They need to be, they need learning. And we don't want to punish the airlines. We don't want to punish any of these people. But every single thing they do is a punishment. It's not like Gavin Newsom goes, well, yes to this and no to that. He just goes no to everything. So where is this balance?
He did one thing that I thought was interesting today. You know, in the face of this announcement, maybe Gary can find it. It's interesting, but it's also diabolical. He said that he had no plans now to do a statewide mandate. Okay. Mm-hmm. So understand that what is being talked, what we were talking about before, is a local municipal mandate. And the city of LA and the county of LA, even though they're different municipalities, are pretty much in lockstep together. And he said, well, I have no plans. I'm going to leave it up to the municipalities. Well, that's great. Except guess what? The only reason that the municipalities can issue these mandates by unelected bureaucrats is because the governor has left in place his emergency, so-called right. declaration of emergency. Without that predicate, you don't have municipalities able to do what they are doing. So that's why I say it's somewhat diabolical. Don't tell me that you're going to let them do what they want to do. And by the way, if we're following the science, remember that? That's our mantra. And we're following the data. We're at historic lows right now. We have dropped off a cliff in terms of the numbers and the data. That why did we wait until we dropped off a cliff to now do mandates?
Yeah, and also, like I said, if it's not really about right or wrong, it's about sort of intent. You know, like if Gavin Newsom or Garcetti or whomever said, look, I'm for vaccinations. First thing, we start with the elderly. They need to all be vaxxed up. Secondly, we go with pre-existing conditions, morbid obesity, all that. And then you go, what about five-year-olds? And he goes, oh, that's fine. They don't need to be vaccinated. We'll save those vaccines for the elderly because it doesn't really harm them. Then I would go, good. He's intellectually honest, except for every single thing he says is just he wants the fucking unborn vaxxed now. He's going to have zygotes and fetuses, embryos. He's going to want them vaxxed because it doesn't end. And like I said, DeSantis goes, have the old people get vaxxed. But if you're young and you're thin and you're healthy, you probably don't need it. Yes, that's because he's doing what people who try to successfully run essentially a business do. You're sort of weighing risk and reward and consequences. I mean, Gary, there was some number, and I'll pull it out of my ass, but basically people under 18, car accidents far outweigh drowning. Number one thing is drowning. That's number one. Then it's car accidents. Then it's just accidents. I mean, the only thing COVID beat in terms of young people and death is bicycle accidents. That's literally all they beat. Everything else was cars, pools, suicides. It's all higher. So I don't know. Do the science. Check the data. Figure it out. If there's therapeutics at work, then start talking about it and touting those. If natural immunity is effective, then let's hear you talk about it.
We are a global world. I've been a global kind of interconnection. I would think before you would vax up five-year-olds, I don't have a problem if a parent wants to do that, but wouldn't you want to vax up other parts of the world and that are traveling and that are moving about, that are getting on airplanes? When I'm getting on a commercial aircraft, I don't know where everybody else is. I'd rather have everybody who could transmit it be vaxxed there. There's just so many policy decisions that don't seem to be based on anything that is rational. And we've got a patchwork of 50 states, as you keep saying. What are you going to do? Are we going to have a vaccine in order to, I guess the only way the U.S. Supreme Court might take it is if we start saying you can't come into California from another state unless you're vaccinated.
Well, that's probably next. Africa, 4% vaccinated, by the way. So they could probably use some supply, over there.
With there's raging variants all over the world. By the way, if we take care of just us, that doesn't solve the problem because the virus is mutating somewhere else and it's going to come back. The virus doesn't say, oh, you're American, I'm not coming here.
Right. But, you know, my main gripe is why does every decision involve another liberty being removed from the taxpayer? That's what I'm saying. How, you know, going back to your case and outdoor dining, you know what I mean? Like, this stuff, unnecessary, not rooted in any science, no stories,
theater.
One out of Wuhan, possibly one case, theater. Exactly right. Do you have that breakdown?
I'm still looking for it. I've found a few technical studies, but none that are listening it the way you are, so I'm still looking.
Yeah. Well, they got to get the kids early. All right, Mark, I know you got a busy social and professional agenda ahead.
Yeah, I got my suit and tie over, sitting right over here. I'm going to change into it in a minute.
You're going, well, it's too late for court, right?
No, I've got a mediation that I'm going to go back into.
All right. Well, don't wear pants.
Okay. Thank you, you guys.
All right.
Love you.
Knock
Bye,
it
guys.
Out of the ballpark. Love you. Last but not least, there's Geico. Do you own, do you rent your home? Well, you do one or the other, and you work hard. How about you get your bundles working at Geico? Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your automotive policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save and how easy it is to save when you get your bundle working at geico.com. All right, I'll be in Brea at the Improv with Rob Riggle and a second guest to be announced, but it'll be a heavy hitter. That'll be October 30th. You can go to adamcarolla.com for all the live shows, and you can check out our Chassis channel, chassy.com, on Pluto TV, channel 687, and check us out on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/reasonabledoubtpodcast. And until next time, Sam Kroll for Mark Garriga saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Corolla Digital.
Geico, do you own, do you rent your home? Well, you do one or the other. You work hard enough. How about you do a little bundle? Bundle with Geico. Make it easy to bundle the homeowners and renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got enough to do. You're busy these days. Save a bunch of money. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save when you visit geico.com and get to bundling.
See, I never change. I've been the exact same angry dude since kindergarten.
And you'll never change.
I want to change. All right. Hi, I'm Doug Ellen. I created the show Entourage a long time ago, and now I'm bringing some cool stuff back. Hollywood Ways podcast starting soon. I'm going to tell you where to eat, where to meet, how to inspire and motivate yourself. Bringing someone cooler and younger and hipper with me. I'm lucky to have her. Breezy, what's happening?
What's up?
And we're going to bring in some cool guests, movies that have inspired me, TV shows. I want to watch them, talk about them, stuff that inspired you, you know?
This is definitely a conversation everybody wants to have.
You got to watch Entourage, by the way, which you haven't.
Dude, you got like 40 seasons of that, right?
No, 8 seasons.
It's
and
40.
Charlie Sheen watched them in 3 days.
How many episodes per season?
Average of 10.
30 minutes or an hour?
30 minutes. Do you hear this?
Don't put me on blast.
I'm excited. We're going to give you every ounce of what Hollywood has to offer. Available on all podcast platforms. Doug Ellen, Breezy, follow us at Hollywood Ways.
Let's go.
Now available on all podcast platforms.